An unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Okay, I asked the members of the practice committee who chose these fascicles to each say a little something about why they chose a particular one. So we're doing tonight is posture. We're doing them in the order they're in the book. So the first one is posture, and I believe that's Steve's. Is that correct? Steve, isn't posture yours? Hello. Uh oh. He froze. I guess he froze.
I think he froze. He's coming back. There's Che.
Yeah.
There he is.
Hi.
There he is.
And now you're muted.
Okay. So, yeah. Where do I start?
So posture is yours, right? Yes?
It was, yes.
So would you please talk about it for a few minutes?
Oh, sure, of course. I chose this one because long ago when I don't remember when I even first read it, but it's really impressed me in that it was very just down to earth. It was about the Zazen practice and the posture. Was asked to be an instructor here. It's just that they're just so. It feels like I can always come back to posture and breathing as the two fundamentals, and that also there are things that I always come back to when I'm doing my own practice. So whether I'm reminding myself when my mind wanders about my practice, or whether I'm instructing someone else, it's always about the posture and the breathing. My favorite line in this fascicle is, "These forms are not a means of obtaining the right state of mind." Do people have the book? It's on page 9 if you want to follow along, three lines from the top, the third line from the top. I'm not going to read long, though, so you may want to just listen if you don't have time to find it. Anyway, it goes, "These forms are not a means of obtaining the right state of mind. To take this posture itself is the purpose of our practice. When you have this posture, you have the right state of mind, so there is no need to try to attain some special state." So he's just gone into a pretty detailed instruction about the Zazen posture, and then he basically dispels with just a few words myths like you have to stop all your thinking, that you should attain nirvana, that you should have a calm mind, anything at all in particular. One of our somebody in this group was talking, and the person isn't here right now, so I don't want to say their name, but they did say it publicly. They said that they really liked it, but the person also obsessed about their own posture. And really, that's not what Suzuki Roshi was saying at all to me. I don't think he was saying, just think about your posture. It's more consistent with what we just read together and chanted together, which is you're ready for anything, you're open to anything. So no particular state of mind is the point. Just sitting there, and he emphasizes, don't slump. If you slump, you're probably mind is wandering. If you If you lose your balance, if you're not straight, your mind is probably wandering. He gets into some pretty deep territory. Like he talks about how in the beginning, how we're not really, it's neither true to say we die or true to say that we don't die and live eternally. And there are many ways to look at that. But in terms of Zazen, I think we can all experience those times when we feel like there's nothing consistent in ourselves. Our minds are wandering so much that we don't even know who we are anymore. And so we keep dying and coming back to the next breath almost. And then those other times where it feels very steady and almost serene. And then it feels like we're eternally in this moment. But neither one of those are what we're after. And no particular state of mind. It's when we have good Zazen, bad Zazen. Actually, there's no good Zazen or bad Zazen. And I think that just encourages me to keep practicing with it. Is that about 10 minutes, Mary? I think I've hit the highlights of why I really like this one.
I think I said 5 to 10 minutes. That's fine. Thank you. I don't think it was quite, it was more than five and not, a little bit less than 10. And Zach is here now.
Yeah. I was just stalling for the real part in person.
So, you know, the lines that you read, at least in this, in the TriBes 50th anniversary version, they start out the chapter.
Oh, let's see.
Is that not the case in the old?
It is. I could have just pointed people to the first page in it.
Yeah, at the top.
Yeah, somebody else thought that was the most important thing.
Apparently so. And he says this is the most important thing several times in this one fascicle about slightly different things, which is also great. So
that's right.
No particular state of mind.
Yes. So he talks about posture to begin with in terms of uprightness. And that... He says to take the posture is itself to have the right state of mind. And I was thinking, I was debating between it means that it is the right state of mind or it expresses the right state of mind or both. Or is that I don't know if that make that there is a distinction to be made there. But I think it's better to think of it as it is the right state of mind because is seems more presencing. Of course, it expresses it, but you're not trying to communicate with somebody. You're just doing it. And I like what Steve said. And the way I would think of it in this fascicle is that it's really about the body. You know, the right state of mind is to be present with your body and to be aware of your body and to work with uprightness in how you sit. And that in itself is the essential art of Zazen. That's from the Fukan Zazen, in case you don't recognize it. And he talks about... In the excerpt that was from the prologue, you know, he says, you know, that you need to have a non-dual mind, and then he talks about sitting full lotus, and it's rare around here that anybody sits full lotus, and I have not sat full lotus for a very long time. It's true what he says. However, I don't think that you have to sit full lotus in order to practice Zazen. But that is the experience when you're sitting like that with both feet up like that and crossing your body. It's like which one? How does it go? It really does kind of the two sides of your body kind of fade in your consciousness. But as he points out, you know that, and we know sort of. I mean, we know when we forget, but you know that you're an individual and you're one with the universe, or you are the universe, or the universe is you. And there's one with everything, and then there's two because there's you and the universe. Right? You're not one, not two, and you're one and two. We are one and two. There is one and two. But our mind keeps trying to make distinctions, and that's the problem. And he's talking about, I think, in this fascicle about, and I'm going to use the word expressing this with our zazen, because we get ourselves settled, and like Mel used to say, you know, he gave himself zazen instruction every time he sat down. So you've given yourself zazen instruction, and you're sitting up straight, and you're not tilting, and your chin, he says, tuck your chin in, I would say just slightly, don't get carried away. But you're sitting up, and breathing, and the top of your head is reaching towards the sky, and your bottom of part of your body is reaching for the ground, for the earth. I would add, you can, and I think I said this during last session, I can't remember, but I've said it before. You can think of your having a long tail, cobalt blue tail, reaching down into the earth, anchoring you. And your feet, if they're on the floor, if you're in a chair, anchoring you. Your butt and your knees, if they're on a cushion or a bench, anchoring you. So you are expressing the universe. You are expressing the earth and the sky with this posture. And your hands, he calls this the cosmic mudra. Sometimes it's called the universal mudra. But again, it expresses the wholeness. There's two hands, but they become one, right? And your thumb tips just barely touch. And a good Zen student has short fingernails. If you've tried to do this, as I do, because my fingernails grow and I forget, and I often have long fingernails, and it's hard to do this with long fingernails. Because they one goes inside the other and it hurts, or it keeps your fingers apart. So keep your fingernails short for the, at least for the practice period. Consider that. I vow to do that. Feel free to nag me if you notice they're getting long. So I like that feeling that he gets, that this is an expression of this non-duality, an expression of an experience of presence, because you're paying attention to lifting up. And I would add to paying attention to honoring the curve in your lower back, paying attention to honoring the curve in the back of your neck. Paying attention to if your mouth is shut gently. Paying attention to where your mudra is. Did it kind of collapse on your lap, or is it in place so that your thumb tips are opposite about your navel and your fingers are overlapping? He says to have, and I've read this other places, you know, to have the middle joints of your fingers meeting. But for me, that's a little difficult. I mean, it's easier for me if I more have just my fingers overlapping so that the top joint and the first joint are meeting. Can you see that? So this is the other, and that's a little hard for me, especially when I get long fingernails. But you can experiment. The other major point that I think that he's making here is well, there's a bunch of things, so I'm getting ahead of myself. So I want to ask you what you think. What does he mean that the posture is the right state of mind? What is the right state of mind?
I like that he said that because it kind of lets me relax a little. It doesn't say you have to do it right. It says you sit down and you do this, and that's it. I mean, you're there. I don't think I understood that at all when I first started to sit. I've felt like, and I think a part of that is because I wasn't in my body at all. I had no idea really what that meant. I mean, I was athletic and physical and all of that, but I didn't know what that meant. And so just sitting down and taking that posture began that experience for me. I have a much, when I read that now, I'm like, well, of course. Of course. After 22 years of taking my seat, you know, I guess I'm a little slow. But I think it's important. I mean, at least for me, I tried so hard for a long time. I tried so hard, and it's not something you can try so hard at and have happen in my experience. As I keep doing it, my understanding changes. I don't know. That's my first thoughts.
Yeah, well, if you, as you have often said, to not in quite these terms, but that you had to realize that you were grasping after enlightenment and let go of it.
Right.
You thought that.
I thought enlightenment was the point.
And you thought you were going to get it.
And I thought I was going to get it. Yeah. Why not?
So cute.
Well, naive.
Yeah, well, I remember early on when I did my first practice period at Green Gulch, Reb at one point said something to me about enlightenment being close. And I thought he meant that he saw me as somebody who was about to get enlightened. And so I'm like sitting really hard and whatever. And then of course I realized I was grasping after it and hoping for it and excited and whatever, and trying really hard. And so the next time I talked to him, I said, you know, you said that I was close to enlightenment, but I think maybe that wasn't so helpful because I got anxious about it or whatever. And he was very sweet. I mean, he didn't start laughing. But he said, that's not what I meant. I meant that enlightenment is right here. Mm-hmm. It's always available. It wasn't about... he said it nicely, but you know, he was saying it wasn't about you taking personal. Oh well, but it was also a relief, you know. So I stopped worrying about it.
It is a relief. Mm-hmm. That's when I quit trying so hard.
Yeah,
and that's when things begin to happen. It's weird.
Anybody else?
Yeah, back in the beginning, I sat at home quite a bit by myself, obviously, and there wasn't anybody on Zoom out there, and I discovered pretty soon that even if my mind wasn't where it should be, if I sat properly, it was a good period of zazen. And which may be another way to say it is, that's the important thing, is the posture. And so I've always been very conscious of my posture, even like sitting right now. I'm sitting sort of ramrod straight, not leaned against the chair. And I think it's good for your back too, which is a little bit of an issue for me. So, so I guess my takeaway is that, focusing on posture when it's hard to focus on breathing or staying present, really, when it was over, I felt like I had a good period of zazen. With no gaining mind. Now I'm bragging.
You already were. Lisa, you guys want to just go ahead and speak? There's only six of us here.
I mean, I'm still on the to take this posture is itself to have the right state of mind. It also sounds like it's like to take this posture is like to kind of like to embody it, you know, because sometimes I take the posture and it's like I'm not really taking the posture, you know, or I'm in the shape of the posture, but I haven't embodied it, you know, because mm-hmm. I could look like I'm there, but my mind can be going, or I'm just not in my body. Like you were saying, Kate, just not in my body. Like I haven't embodied my body in the posture. Mm-hmm. And I definitely, there's a difference. I can feel the difference.
Yeah, I understand. I think I understand. I mean, we can't know exactly somebody else's experience, but I have my version of it. In San Francisco Zen Center, they used to talk about some people doing what was called as if practice. They looked really good, but they weren't really, really in it. Yeah. We're going to talk about in a minute, you know, he talks about taking ownership, and there's a way in which maybe that's another way of talking about it, that sometimes you sit down and you're not really, like you said, inhabiting your body. You're not making it your own right then.
That reminds me of my early days at Berkeley Zen Center, when I used to go to two periods in the morning, and by maybe the middle of the second period, I felt like I was trying to wrestle myself to stay still. And I don't remember whether I read it later or at the time, but somewhere around that time, I read that, well, this isn't what a Buddhist does. You don't like wrestle your mind into submission, but that's kind of what I was trying to do, wrestle my body and mind into, like, so it was like an endurance contest for a long time. So, interesting.
Yes.
I don't think that's what he meant.
No, I don't think he gets into that here, but I say to you that I think there's something to be said for endurance not contests, but sitting still and staying there when you don't feel like it. You know, when it hurts, not hurting yourself hurts, but hurts, or when your foot falls asleep, or when you're just your mind is just, you know, driving you crazy and you're really anxious. That's exactly when you need to sit still.
And I guess what I'm trying to say is that at that time I had this kind of willpower. It was all about will and dominating myself. It wasn't about trying to just see what happens and being open. Maybe I had to go through that stage to kind of realize that that doesn't work. But it totally doesn't.
No, and if it is, go ahead.
Yeah, I just I think I get that kind of difference between, you know, using your willpower to keep you on the cushion as opposed to staying there out of curiosity, like really asking, what is this? Instead of, I must endure this. You know, I actually, this past one day sitting, I had a period of zazen where I really felt like I just wanted to jump out of my skin. I had a lot of emotion and come up, and it wasn't, I must sit here. And, you know, it really was more, what is this? And it didn't really make it easier to sit there with it, but it's just a different attitude. And I think it's more useful to, it was useful for me to ask what it was. Not that I got a real answer, but but it feels like I it wasn't because I wanted to gain understanding. It was more open. It's very hard to put words on that experience, but it feels different than willpower.
I don't know if this makes sense, but for me, maybe it's sort of on the level of vow, because I could be sitting there, you know, especially, I guess, at Tassajara, then during Sushi, I don't know, but nowadays, not so much, but I would be sitting there and I would really want to leave, or I would be, you know, in some pain or discomfort or terminally bored. and then I would count my breaths from 1 to 100 and hope that by then the period would be over. And then if it wasn't, then I do it again. And I don't remember. I mean, there was part of me that would really have liked to get up and run out of the zendo or just start moving around. And I didn't. But it didn't feel like it was an insisting, willing kind of thing. It was something else that kept me there. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I wanted to be there. even though I didn't like it. I guess he's not talking about whether you like it or not. I think that's part of the point that Steve made. Dana, do you want to say something?
First, I want to say I had two shots today, so I'm not feeling my best. So it's just like a disclaimer for whatever I say. So when Kate was talking, I felt like crying. I was trying not to cry. to stay in your body, it's hard for me. And so Zazen is hard for me. Pretty hard for me. It looks pretty calm, I think, from the outside, but it's not easy. And I often feel like screaming and running out of the room. And in my mind, I do. I'll literally run and I usually break all the windows and jump out and I'll run down the street for a minute and come back, sit in my body again. But part of me thinks, like, what's the big deal with the posture? Like, if the point is to inhabit your body, is it not the practice so that you can inhabit your body no matter what your posture is? And so I keep practicing, thinking maybe I can also have Zazen be a part of my life all the time, you know, checking the mail or being with a difficult situation in the street. So the posture is hard for me, the sitting in that posture. It's never really comfortable. I never feel comfortable for very long, but I endure it most of the time. It feels like endurance. And then there's little moments where it's pretty great. But you know, it's hard if you have issues with your neurology or you have other kinds of conditions. It's hard to buy the posture. You know, I know there's other kinds of postures and I've experimented and I will always continue to do that. I think that I'm not stuck on anything. I'll sit in a chair sometimes. I'll do all that. But the fundamental thing you said, Kate, to me is what the point is, right? And that's what's hard for me because of just what I'm letting go of, right? And then I love this book and I've had it a long time and it found me. The guy at Forest Book in San Francisco, down there in Chinatown, gave it to me. This first posture, this first chapter is really, really marked up. So we could spend forever on it, I think. But it just seems absurd to just be like, what's it all about, the posture? Like, because he says this is Buddhism right at the end. It just seems absurd. And yet it's so many other things than the posture. I'm just saying what I think, you know. It feels crazy making in a way. And then at this, and like, how, Mary says, how is better. Mel would say, how? How is it it works? How is it that it's this posture? You know, what's the big deal?
I'm sorry, you just keep sitting, but also talk to me, Dana. You know, there's support available, there's help and there's suggestions and so on available, but and talk to your buddies. It is the body. It is the body. And, And it doesn't matter. You know, a friend of mine, when she was 18, she was drunk and she rolled a car, and now she's a quadriplegic. And she's in a wheelchair, you know, and always in a wheelchair, and except when she's in bed. And she can't really sit up that straight. And one time in Shosan at Berkeley Zen Center, she asked Mel about it, because I think he'd probably been lecturing about Zazen instruction and whatever. And she said, what if you can't assume the posture? And he looked at her and he said, I think you're assuming the posture. Okay, so, I mean, he starts out talking about full lotus. Well, I'm not going to sit full lotus ever again. I can't even sit cross-legged for very long. It hurts a lot, actually. And I'm very disappointed in that, but I've had to let go of it and find ways to sit zazen, you know, on my bench. So it's something that I think it's important that in our process that we come to some terms with it, but it isn't easy. And sometimes it's really difficult. But I think it's important, and I think it's important to not get bound up in the way he talks about it, you know? Because he talks about it as if he talks about it at the beginning part, as if everybody sits full lotus, which, you know, probably a lot of those young people in the 60s did. I don't know. But they sure as hell weren't all sitting full lotus. You know, there were these older ladies that sat there, photographs. I can see them in my mind's eye, and one of them I knew pretty well. But at any rate, you know, they were these women that started with him. You know, and I don't remember if they sat in chairs or not, but they certainly were not sitting full lotus. And I doubt that Lou Hartman sat full lotus. I don't know. Maybe Blanche did. Anyway, that's kind of, I don't think that's the point, really. And we have to come to our own understanding of it. The most important thing is to keep your back straight, to have a straight spine. And as I always say, not like a board. Your spine has a curve in it, and it's really important to honor that. And I'm going to do a little zazen instruction now. Unfortunately, the chairs that are in here slope the wrong way. You know, they should be either flat or it should be this way, so that your butt is always above your knees. And same, that's easy on a bench, and it's pretty easy if you're sitting cross-legged. If you're sitting cross-legged and your knees are up so high that they're above your hips, then that's something that needs to be addressed, probably with putting sitting on two zafus. At any rate, here goes. Okay. Now this goes for sitting on a cushion or sitting on a bench or sitting in a chair, that when you first sit down, you really arch your back, and here's your coccyx, right? Your tailbone. And in a chair, you aim it towards the bottom of the back of the chair, and then you sit up from there. And it naturally, you will not, my back is not against the back of the chair. I don't know if you can see that. And it's often useful to put a little something down at the bottom. And the chair where the back meets the seat is the best. These are pretty close, but anyway. But you sit up like that. And when you sit on a zafu, you get yourself settled on the front third of it. And then the easiest thing is to lift yourself up and do that same thing. Arch your back and then sit down from there. And you can feel now your bones, your spine says, oh, good, right. And the same thing on a bench. And you start out really exaggerating it. You don't want to sit exaggerating it, but you exaggerate it to get started and then sit from there. And pushing up with your breastbone. You know, he says, push up with the top of your head. And we say sometimes, you know, as if there were a string up here, pulling up the top of the back of your head or the back of the top of your head. Okay. And your chin just tucked a little bit, because if it's tucked too much, your head falls forward and that's probably you're already asleep. And if it's sticking out, he says you may be dreaming. I don't know. But at any rate, if it's sticking out, it's uncomfortable and it's off balance. So you want it to be balanced. And sometimes it's good to just move it around a little bit, right? And let it find the balance. And then just tuck your chin a tiny bit. And as it says in the Fukan Zazengi, and he says, your ears in line with your shoulder and your nose in line with your navel. And then the mudra, which I said, you know, for me, it's easier to have just my fingers overlapping and not all the way this way, but whatever. And then you tuck them against your body, your little fingers against your body, and then relax from there. And he says the classic, which is to have your arms out a little bit as if you had an egg under each armpit. And you should be, and it should be relaxed. And my experience is that you can just hang there. When you're sitting on a chair, your hands are probably touching your thighs, but when you're sitting cross-legged, they're not. But they can hang there, and it should be relaxed. Your back should be comfortable. And the bottom of your body, settled in the earth, and the top of your body floating. And it's useful. Lean to the right and lean to the left, and then smaller and smaller arcs till you find the middle, and then forward and back again, smaller and smaller till you find the balance point. And one other thing of looking for where your mudra goes, I learned this from a yoga teacher. This is more relevant, I think, if you're sitting cross-legged or maybe on a bench. Anyway, one way to find a good place for your mudra is you come up with your hands. You come up until you can feel your back start to arch. And then you go down until your stomach starts to kind of pooch out. And the proper place is in the middle, not either one, but in the middle. And that can be helpful to find a good spot for your mudra. So, do you have any questions about any of that?
Yeah, I'm so used to being straight, but when I move my mudra, my back doesn't move.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you come, bring it up, bring your arms up, your back starts to arch.
Oh, I see.
And that's too high. And then you go down and your stomach starts to sort of relax in some way.
Okay. Yeah, and I would just encourage anyone to... I suffered in silence for for a long, you know, I was embarrassed to ask Mary. I wanted to, you know, it was just a lot of my own stuff about being, you know, a good long-suffering Catholic girl. Oh, my God. I'm going to sit here and suffer, you know, because that's holy, or, you know.
Isn't that what the nuns say, offer it up?
Offer it up, yeah, offer it up. But, you know, I got to the point where I just would ask more often, and I will thank you, Mary, because she's giving me many suggestions specific to my own struggle. You know, we all have different bodies and all of that. I will say too that as I did some exercises for core strength, it really helped, especially with longer, like all day sits and stuff. I've done that for a while, and it eases the. I'm stronger, so it's easier to find my seat.
Yay, Pilates!
Yay, Pilates!
Okay. Okay. The other thing that I think that is really important is that sense that he's talking about it, about taking ownership of your body and your practice. And I don't think he means that in a gaining way. He has a way. He's famous for, he says, you're the boss. And Mel told me this, somebody heard Mel talking about it, and they thought that Suzuki Roshi told Mel that Mel was the boss. This person was really impressed that Mel was the boss. And Mel said, no. He used to say that everybody, you're the boss. You're the boss of yourself. And he says that in here. And it's not about gaining anything or being in charge of everybody else, but it is in the sense that of taking ownership of it. Like I think Lisa was pointing at. He says we don't exist for the sake of something else. But doing something is expressing our nature, so that's in the sense of sitting in this posture is expressing your true nature. And kill the Buddha if the Buddha exists somewhere else. This is the Buddha. So doing something is expressing your own nature. We don't exist for the sake of something else. We exist for the sake of ourselves. This is the fundamental teaching expressed in the forms we observe. So he also talks then about you know, like when you do kinhin, you have, actually this is how we walk in the Zendo also. This is called shashu. So when you're moving around the Zendo like this, but you make a fist of your left hand and you hold your thumb and you place it here so that your forearm is parallel to the floor and you cover it with your right hand. And he says it feels like holding a pillar and it helps you be upright. And I've never experienced that. Doesn't feel like that to me. But it's a wonderful image. So if it feels like that to you, enjoy it. But at any rate, there is a sense in you, it's still zazen. It's always zazen. Life is zazen. So Dana, it's true what you said. And when we're doing kinhin, we walk like this. And again, we should assume the posture when we're doing Kenyan. Again, your arms, you know, a little out from your side, not, you know, not like that, not like the Marines or something, relaxed, but a little out from your side, not holding yourself, but a little out from your side, and walking upright. You know, when you're doing Kenyan, it's on, at least indoors, it's on a pretty flat surface. You don't really have to watch your feet. You can stand up straight and look a little, you know, far enough ahead of yourself to see what's coming. And the breath remains the same.
Yeah, I would say I really liked Kenyan because it was a way to kind of train to stay in Zazen.
Uh-huh.
I noticed right away my brain is adjusting to standing up, and and then immediately the heart rate really increases right off the bat because I'm standing up. And then I think I have to go outside. There's always the next thing that goes with the increased heart rate. Then you're like, no, this is Zazen. So I liked getting up and doing Kenhen when I felt like I needed to. I have neurological issues in my feet. And so my toes will fold down and cramp and stuff that most people don't deal with. So like I needed to stand up and get my feet back straight, my toes straight again. And so doing Kenhen, which I will say in our Zendo, there's definitely I would rather walk on the other side because it squeaks the floor really badly. I feel really heavy on the floor, on that one side. Steve's nodding.
Everybody squeaks the floor. This building's 100 years old.
Well, then I worked with the squeaking floor, and I realized no one cares. It's
That's
me.
Right.
Again, my brain again. But anyway, yeah, Kenhen.
Yeah, welcome to the club. It's and also the transition is another time to pay attention. Like, you know, I think Kay talked about being asked to slow down a little bit, and then about that section of the Fukan Zazengi, when you arise from sitting, move, what is it, slowly and quietly, calmly and deliberately. Is that right? Mm-hmm. And I think of that now every time I get up. And it's really helpful to, you know, to not make the transition too quickly, to be present for the whole transition.
Right. That helped. That I'm glad you said that, because the word transition began to amplify a little bit in my life, where I began to become aware of all the transitions, and that's where mistakes happen or accidents happen or mindfulness is lost. Or,
yes.
Yeah.
So now the most important point is to own your own physical body. And then he talks about not slumping and so on. But I want to talk about it in a different way, because I think that we need to remember to take ownership of our body and to inhabit our body, because so much of the time we're up here and we're not owning our body. We're not present in our body. And we're already somewhere else. I told you about a friend of mine who always, when she's developed a habit, when she walks in the door, she puts her keys down on a little plate right by the door, because the rest of her is already in the kitchen making a cup of tea. And so she's not paying any attention. So she relies on that habit, so that the keys get put in the right place. And that kind of habit, that particular one, is useful for all of us. And some version probably. But it, and our practice is to work with, to practice being in our body and taking ownership of it, taking responsibility for it, and not in a way that's grasping or trying to get anywhere or insisting or torturing ourselves, but in a way that includes, maybe the word is exploring our body, and find out what the posture is for you. And then do that, inhabit that. And if you're in a wheelchair and you can't sit up straight, then inhabit that. And if that's not it, inhabit whatever it is and find your place where you can I'm trying to think of the word I want to use. I don't mean stay still for an hour without moving necessarily, but where you can find some ease, even if that ease includes some pain or some discomfort. Does that make sense? I'm not talking about torturing yourself. And I'm not talking about, you know, if you can't sit cross-legged, don't sit cross-legged. And if you can sit on a bench, that's great. But whatever it is, take ownership of it.
Yeah, that word, I mean, those two words that you said, inhabit and ease, I feel really touched by that word ease, because I just didn't have any idea of what that meant. You know, I just, it's making me kind of emotional even saying it. And it's nice to have an inkling of that now, you know, what that is for me. What I do have a sense of ease. Even when I'm about to jump out of my skin, which seems, well, I don't freak out about freaking out. I mean, it's weird. It's a weird thing. It's like I can have the same experience I've had 100 times, but there's something else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My friend Barbara years ago said that she realized she had gotten to the point where this was at Tassajara, she was no longer afraid of being tired.
Right.
But she used to get freaked out about being tired, and you're tired a lot at Tassajara. And then it turns out you go to sleep and you feel much different in the morning. Right. Duh. Does anybody have any other comments or questions about any of this? Or Steve, do you want to say some final thoughts or not? But
I don't, these aren't necessarily summing up thoughts, but something that I wrote in my margin notes as I was thinking about what to say and didn't say earlier, that I think that I do sometimes wonder why this particular posture has stuck and been the one that has become such an integral part of our tradition. And something that it seems to me that what we're doing is we are being awake and relaxed, alert and relaxed. And that what are some other possibilities? Well, we could lie on our backs. They do that in yoga after they've done some exercises. But that's too close to a sleeping posture. I think that would put it would put me out for sure. So I don't think that would work. And would constantly doing kinhin or doing something more active something more like Tai Chi or yoga do the trick? Would that be a better posture to be awake and alert and relaxed? I don't think so, because there's so much like thought of gaining. There's so much activity. And it's not a place where you can just let your bones take the weight of gravity and let your muscles relax as much as possible. And so it's not, and so none of that says it has to be full lotus or half lotus, or I've been transitioning myself into not, I'm Burmese style now, but for a while I was trying a bench. I mean, it is always transition. That's okay. But being upright seems like it's very important, because it's the way where you can be doing nothing else but being awake and nothing else but being relaxed. So I feel like that's why we do this.
I think you're right. And it's also true that this is an ancient yogic position, and this is a cosmic mudra. And I think of it as completing some sort of an energetic circle, that our hands together like this against our bellies, that it completes the energetic circle. And so it represents not one, not two, right here, right? Or one and two, as you, well, not how you prefer, they're both true. So that's just the way it is. Anyway, I think that's part of it. And the position is long, I'm sure, antedates the Buddha, the historic Buddha. Anyway, and when I could sit cross-legged, it's a very comfortable position. Not necessarily for the whole time, but if you can get really, really comfortable. And I don't know any other position that's as comfortable as that. Sitting in a chair is actually harder. And sitting on a bench can be difficult too. It can be hard on your back. So anyway, but the point is stay in your body. You know, we chanted the Ehe Kosu Hotsugan Man, which is Dogen's practice vow, which to open the practice period, you know, and he quotes Lumya said, you know, in this life save the body, which is the fruit of many lives. So this is it. Get to know it. What was the last line? This is Buddhism?
This is a secret, I think. Another secret.
This is the conclusion of Buddhism.
Oh, the conclusion. Yeah, that's right, the conclusion.
It's probably, I think there is somewhere in here that he says secret again, but I'm not going to try to find it. It's right up there with most important thing. Okay, so you can lead us in the closing chant. What, one time through the vows, beings are numberless.
Me?
Yeah, you're the you can, you're the Doan today. So
beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are...